truth be told, or your bullshit getting old. The world is getting cold. Don't nobody owe you nothing, so quit fronting. Nothing wrong with being honest. It's a lot of broken promises. Truth be told, we could communicate without all the gun violence. All it took was one conversation. It'll prevent a whole lot of altercation.
Hello there, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Truth Be Told. Today I have a legend on the show with me. You know him as the hardcore icon, Justin Credible. Others know him as PJ Polacco. PJ, how the hell are you, brother?
I'm doing fantastic, brother. How you doing?
Pretty good, man. Happy to have you on the show. I'm ready whenever you are.
Yeah, man. I'm ready to roll.
All right. Awesome. So first, tell us, how were you exposed to the business and what made you want to become a professional wrestler?
Wow. It's... I would say back in 1983, I was probably, 10 years old or something. I still, back in the day, I lived with, mom, dad, brother. We had the big TV in the living room, and then we were lucky enough to have a black and white with rabbit ears. If, a lot of you kids may not know what that is, but nonetheless, I lived in Connecticut, still do. And, we got WWF TV on Saturday mornings. And my first exposure to pro wrestling was watching Hulk Hogan pin the Iron Sheik to become the WWF champion and really the start of Hulkamania. And from then on, I just fell in love with it completely.
Now, you were trained by one of the legendary Harts and Keith Hart, and also a former Impact Players tag partner, Lance Storm. How did that opportunity come about, and what was it like training with the Hart family?
Well, I was always, back in the day, I graduated high school in 1991. I knew I wanted to be a pro wrestler, but, there was no internet, and the business, quite frankly, was very closed off at the time, and for good reason. And I almost wish it was today, because there's an oversaturation of bad independent wrestling, bad independent wrestlers, people that call themselves wrestlers that have no business calling themselves wrestlers. But I was working at a grocery store called Stop and Shop. I was a bag boy, summer job after I graduated high school. And they had a magazine section. So during the break, I would go look at the wrestling magazines, the new ones, and, read up on them for a couple minutes during break. And at the back of one of the magazines, there was a advertisement which said Hart Brothers Pro Wrestling Camp. They showed a picture of Brett Owen and the Hart Brothers and Stu Hart and all that. And it said, dare to be great. If interested, boom, they gave you a phone number, which is unusual. It's like, wow. So I got the guts enough to call. And they laid it all down for me. I spoke to Bruce Hart at the time initially. It was $2,500. I had to buy my own plane ticket. But they would house me in Calgary. They'd get a place for me. I'd have to buy my own food and whatnot. I worked for a full year, saved up all that money. And in 1992, summer of 92, I went up to Calgary, Alberta, Canada to train to be a professional wrestler.
Now, not too much longer after that, your first run came in the form of Aldo Montoya. Who was it that came up with that gimmick, and do you feel like you were given enough opportunity to get that character over?
The WWE WWF at the time creative team came up with that gimmick. And the reason they came up with that gimmick was, at the time, the World Cup was coming around. Business was bad. So we were going to a lot of foreign markets, overseas, Europe, et cetera, South America. And they were planning on going to Brazil, which is a huge country. 75% of South America is actually Brazil. And Brazil is a Portuguese-speaking country. So they knew that I, Vince and Pat, I always had a good relationship with them. They knew I spoke Portuguese. They knew I was Portuguese. So they wanted to make a Portuguese character to help overseas draw. So at first they designed a soccer player, and I wish I had the artwork that the art department handed me, but it was basically a soccer player. That was what Aldo was supposed to be originally. I guess Vince didn't like it, or somebody didn't like it. I didn't have a say in it, but so then they drew up a superhero type character that on paper looked like a Power Ranger, like these big Road Warrior-esque shoulder pads, long flowing hair over this mask that was super cool, and I looked like a real like a superhero.
That sounds awesome.
Well, it sounds awesome, but when I got handed my costume on Monday Night Raw 2 hours before my debut. Uh-huh. And when I put that on, I figured, wow, this is nothing like what that looked like. And I did the best I could with it. I was given the opportunity quite a few times. I was a young wrestler. I was very inexperienced. Even though I had gained experience, at first, when it's most important, when you make your debut especially, I never knew how to get over. I was always the guy getting people over, the extra, the jobber. So I'd really never had a match at that time where I was supposed to be the feature. So it took some adjustment. And, after a while, I became very good. But, I think at the time, the business was changing. The character and everything was already, we'd had several runs. Like, they had Jake the Snake Roberts be my mentor, and I had feuds with Jeff Jarrett, Jerry Lawler, I did some stuff with Steve Austin, which on his podcast that I did two of his podcasts, but on the first one, he credited me with a lot of the stuff he came up with, because we allowed each other to just be loose out there. And a lot of wrestlers, don't like to agree to not plan and script stuff. I said, Steve, let's just go out there and just do it. Say what you want to say. And we did it on live TV, because Vince sometimes on the pre-taped shows, because not every tape, every show was live, he would edit out what he didn't like. And through doing, Steve and I doing that via live, the Stone Cold character started to be born. And I worked with him on the road so many times. We did every small town up and down, this great nation of ours. And really, he credits a lot of me helping him, me being so open to giving myself to him and kind of letting him take advantage of the character and, the words and in the beatings and so forth. And, we'd go out there and he'd literally be like, I'll be like, Steve, what are we doing? I don't know, kid. Could be 10 minutes full match or kick stunner. I'll let you know out there. but allowing that and agreeing to that, because some wrestlers would be like, no, I want to know what we're doing. But allowing that freedom allowed him to kind of play with his character and define who Stone Cold was going to be. So it was a really cool experience and a real learning experience for me as well.
And I like that you brought up the Jerry Lawler feud. I think that was in 96. And they did after the match where he poured a bottle of Jim Beam down your throat. And mm-hmm. Who thought of that finish, and was that real legit whiskey, or what was that?
I don't know who planned the finish. I'm sure the writers, Vince, Pat Patterson at the time, whoever. But no, it was Ice-T, as a matter of fact.
Ice-T?
Yeah. So
it was close to around that time you had started teaming up with young Al Snow as Avatar. Do you think that and also the backlash from the mask is kind of what was the end for that character?
Perhaps. I remember, and this was after WrestleMania 1997. I was when Sean won the title in Anaheim. Him and I were exclusively traveling together. He just kind of needed, a young boy to help him out. And, I was hanging with those guys. Razor was one of my best friends. Sean Waltman as well, and you know, Hunter and Kev, all of those guys were my friends. Basically Sean had a driver, which was referee Tim White, and Arnold Skoland was the guy, the money guy. He used to manage Bob Backlund. He was driving with us too, but I was kind of just there to make sure Sean was safe and, you know, got to the hotel and to the building on time, you know, because back then we were running pretty hard as far as, travel, sometimes doing 30 days straight and, you know, and, but I got to be real close with Sean, and through our discussions, we kind of said, you know, you should go somewhere else. You know, you're never going to get where you want to go in this character, in this position. You are going to need to go somewhere else, and you're going to be, you know what I mean? Like, rediscover yourself. Absolutely. So, yeah, it was Sean's idea. Well, he gave me the 411 on it. And then I went to Vince's office in Stamford. I set up a meeting with Vince, you know, and there was a bunch of the executives and Vince in a room in his office. And I said, look, Vince, you know, I've been here for 3 years. I still have 2 years left on my contract. But, you know, Kevin Scott just left for WCW, and they're offering me opportunity down there. And this character is not going to go anywhere. I said, and I feel like I've been wrestling full time now for 3 years. I feel like I'm coming into my own. I'm 23 years old. I've been wrestling since I was a kid, 19. You know, I want an opportunity. So he wouldn't give me my release to go to WCW.
And contract stipulations.
Yeah. I had 2 years left, but they were, you know, they were just offering me a good financial deal. And if it wasn't for Aldo, it was for just me, the performer. Obviously, they would have repackaged me. But Vince said, well, what we'll do is we'll send you to USWA, which was Jerry Lawler's territory, and Vince used as developmental. And we'll send you down there to learn how to work as a heel, and then we'll bring you back up. And I said, well, I really don't have much of a choice. Okay, I'll play. So I just got married, went down there. Mind you, I have a home up in Connecticut where I pay rent. I have a car payment. I have bills. And then I go to Memphis, and I'm getting paid $40 a night to wrestle 4 nights a week.
Jeez.
Now, Vince, in all fairness, was giving me $500 a week from him, you know. But still, that doesn't equate to having a rental car.
Traveling and surviving, yeah.
And living in Memphis at an extended stay. So, you know, you're bleeding money right there. So I hung in there for 6 weeks. After 6 weeks, I didn't say anything. I didn't tell anybody anything. But one of the last weeks I was there, Jerry Lawler and Paulie from ECW, they were doing an angle, USWA versus ECW. And Jerry the King Lawler was coming to ECW, and there was a whole feud with ECW. And Chris Candido, who I had worked with in WWF at the time, was a very important figurehead in ECW. And he goes, you know, man, you should just come over here, man. You know, you'll be used right. We're going places. We're going, you know, we'll be on pay-per-view this year and blah, blah, blah. Well, Paul Heyman got to talking to Vince. So Vince technically released me straight into Paul Heyman. And I debuted, I think, September or October for ECW of 1997.
And then, you know, you debuted, I think, as either PJ Walker or PG-187, and then finally Just Incredible, and you had that amazing undefeated streak.
Actually, when I debuted, and I don't even know if this is out there, I remember the weekend. It was a Friday night and a Saturday night. It was the first night was Queens, New York, in the the Saturday night was at the ECW Arena in Philadelphia. Friday night, I wrestled Chris Candido, and I came out as Aldo Montoya with the mask. And I renounced all that bullshit, you know, of WWF. And, of course, you know, the ECW crowds were really hostile. So I threw the mask off into the crowd. I had an ECW shirt on underneath whatever else I was wearing on. So it was kind of like, you know, I'm with ECW. Candido and I had a hell of a match. You know, I put him over. And then Saturday, Jerry Lynn and I both debuted at the same time at the ECW Arena. And that night I went over on Jerry, and that was the start of Just Incredible. And he did, and that was the night, the first time they used the name Just Incredible was that night in Philadelphia.
Now, did you have more say into that gimmick? Was that more of your choice?
It was all my choice. I mean, I just basically went out there and did, you know, I just did whatever. I was just trying to, I was doing a little bit of everybody that I admired. I was doing a little bit of Scott Hall, a little bit of Ric Flair, a little bit of Shawn Michaels, you know?
Fantastic, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. I appreciate that. But I was just, you know, I was just trying to find my stride, you know, and with time and with confidence, the character grew into its own thing, you know, because it always takes time. I'd never worked as a heel before, but it was just, you know, ECW was actually a real easy place to work with. Like, people were petrified going into that place because of, you know, the fans being so hard. But I found that exhilarating. And, you know, I know how to wrestle. You know, I'm confident in my ability, so I just went out there and had a great time every night, and it was actually, you know, one of the best, those 3.5 years I was there was probably some of the best times I've ever had in my professional life. You know, it was easy, it was fun. I mean, there were some sacrifices, both financially and physically, but I made good money there at the end of the day. You know, towards the end, I was making $3,000 a week to wrestle 2 nights a week. And traveling much less than I was, and making more money than I ever did for Vince. So it was a win-win, and two-time ECW World Tag Champ, one-time World Heavyweight Champion, and you can't take that away.
And you brought up Jerry Lynn debuting the same time as you, which I think is one of my favorite feuds of yours. What was one of your favorite feuds, and why?
Wow. I mean, I have a couple that stick out, but probably my favorite feud was Tommy Dreamer. Only because he was the flag bearer of ECW. And we just did some stuff that was, pretty raunchy at the time. Like when his grandfather legitimately passed away. Tommy came up with the idea that they do a 10-bell salute for his grandpa, and I interrupt it. You know, that was pretty ballsy of Tommy. I mean, it was all Tommy's idea. I was a little uncomfortable with it, but just stuff like that, we did some pretty cool stuff. From an angle standpoint, I would say definitely Tommy Dreamer. From a match standpoint, I would say Jerry Lynn. But then also I had a great feud with Shane Douglas, one of my best matches of my entire career at the ECW Arena. Absolute classic, you know, and also Sabu and I, Anarchy Rules, 1999 was another one, another, you know, Meltzer gave it 4 stars or 4.5 stars, something like that. I mean, but Jerry Lynn and Tommy Dreamer are the ones that stick out mostly to me.
What was it like backstage when you first arrived in ECW as opposed to maybe towards the end?
Every time you went backstage, I was always a quiet guy. And when you go to a place like ECW, they've been there for a while. They were there from the onset, a lot of the guys. They were there when nobody was getting paid. There was 100 people in the crowd. They see me coming in, as a lot of other guys did, you know, that have been to WWF and WCW and so forth. So, you know, you always get a little bit of, you know, you're looked at a little funny, but it didn't take me more than a weekend to acclimate. And at the end of the day, they became family. To this day, when you're around a group of ECW wrestlers, it's more family than anything else. We all we cherish that time so much that it's unlike anything I've ever witnessed to this day. 27 years in the business, that those 3.5 years gave me.
How much did your run as ECW World Champ do for your career, and how did Francine become your valet?
It did tons for my career. I mean, you know, we call them Mark magazines for a reason, but they had a magazine out called in the heat of the Attitude Monday Night Wars. They had this World of Wrestling, WOW Wrestling magazine that Bill Apter was producing. And out of the top 500, I was number 6 in the year 2000. And I know it's a work, but just from a legitimacy standpoint, I'm sitting there with the Goldbergs and the Steve Austins and the Rocks and, you know, guys like that and the Hunter Hearst Helmsleys. And, you know, I was the top ECW guy on that list. So what it solidified to me is I'm a main eventer. I main evented over a dozen pay-per-views for ECW. And I'm so proud of that, because when you become that guy, it doesn't mean, you know, you don't win anything. It's a work. It's not, you know, it's like writing a story. It's like being in a movie, you know, the movie's written for you. But when they put a title on you like that, that means you're the show stealer. You're the guy that ends the show. You're the guy, you know, and they trusted me with that spot. Paul Heyman, one of the guys who is, you know, obviously top 5 revolutionary guys and minds in the world of pro wrestling. For him to have that trust and faith in me meant the world. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. In your second run in WWE, you were teamed with X-Pac and Albert. What were your thoughts on that stable? And were you expecting a bigger role after, you know, being ECW World Champ?
Well, we certainly did at first. I mean, you know, the pairing was perfect. Sean Waltman and I were friends. He was just coming fresh out of DX. Albert was supposed to be our, you know, our big
muscle.
Guy. Yeah, our muscle. Although I thought aesthetically his look didn't necessarily fit what we were doing. But nonetheless, you know, we were we actually suggested doing 6-man tag team titles, because we had a feud. Our first feud was with the Dudley Boys, and they had Spike, Bubba, and Devon. And they had me, Albert, and Pac, and they had a couple of other people running as a 6-man, but they never bought it. But what happened was, when I was there, all of a sudden WCW got bought out by Vince McMahon. And what ended that tag team abruptly was the fact that now we have this influx of talent, and this thing called the Alliance happened. You know, where they, because if you remember correctly, I was in the ring for that, where it looked like, you know, the ECW guys were going to form their own faction and invade Raw, and WCW was invading Raw. So there was like going to be WWE on one side, ECW guys on the other, and WCW guys on the other.
Oh, yeah, it was in Cleveland. I was there.
No, it was in Atlanta. That one was in Atlanta. I'll never forget it. The pay-per-view, yes. But I'm sorry, the setup for it was in Atlanta. I was in the ring for that. The buzz on that building was amazing until the end, where they merged WCW with ECW and called it the Alliance. That's where the Pac thing and I went under, and everything else went under, and gave us a very short run, unfortunately, which could have been a very great tag team, because, you know, we're great wrestlers. He's a great individual wrestler, I'm a great individual wrestler, and we're a pretty good tag team, and unfortunately, timing on that really really stunk. But no, you know, it is what it is, you know, and that's the direction it went.
Yeah, you and Pac definitely should have had more time as a tag team.
Oh, I wish. We talk about it to this day.
You were also the first person, I believe, to put CM Punk over.
I was, yeah.
What was he like back then? Was he the same as he is now?
I haven't talked to CM Punk probably
since
2007. So, I mean, all I remember is this. We had a hell of a match at the Hammerstein Ballroom for the ECW TV show. It was his debut, and he was so thrilled because the match was actually a really, really good match. If you go back and watch it on YouTube, it's a hell of a match.
Yeah, it was.
Even though, you know, it was a, you know, 7-8 minute TV match, it was a competitive, good match. He was in tears. Literally tears streaming down his face, thanking me so much. He was actually dating Maria Canales at the time. I remember that. And but he came up to me in tears, thanking me over and over again. Thank you for doing this for me. I respect you, blah, 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 blah. And he was a great, I mean, very gracious dude. And, you know, so that's the guy I knew. I don't know anything. You know what I mean? People change. He's had tremendous success. I believe he's one of the best in the game, was one of the best in the game. But, you know, to me, he was always a class act, by far a class act.
Do you think he ever wrestles again?
I think so. There's no way you could, brother, listen, you can make all the money in the world, but you know, when you make a lot of money, you know, you eat a little better, your home's a little better, your car's a little more expensive. Even with me, when I was with WWE, I had a big ass house, nice cars, you know. Money doesn't grow on trees. So, I think before it's all in my personal opinion, I don't know anything, but in my personal opinion, before it's all said and done, I think he goes back to WWE instead of AEW, which it's just an assumption, but man, if he was to go to a company like that, or even another company with a smaller win, that's like the stuff that makes and breaks the end. That stuff that could give back to the industry. You show up at an AEW or even something else like an Impact or anything. I mean, that's just
right. Power, that would be
dude. You know what I mean? But that would be awesome. That's one of my favorite shows on TV
right now.
It's
awesome, isn't it? I love it.
I love it. I'm good friends with Billy Corgan. I've had him on my personal podcast. Before his first pay-per-view, I believe it was Crockett Cup. He was on the night before. Billy and I have known each other for 20 years, and what I'm saying is he could really. And, you know, make a difference in pro wrestling. And I know he doesn't owe anybody anything, but one thing has always been important is kind of like pass the torch. I think if he has no interest in wrestling again, I respect that. You got to. But damn it, at least one time pass the torch. Seriously, you know, and get some company off. And help the business that you were so passionate about, help grow that business. Because right now, if he showed up in AEW, the ratings have been declining every week. I understand because I do a review show with Vince Russo, and we did one today. This is my third podcast, believe it or not, today. I did one with Francine, my ex-manager, earlier.
That's awesome.
But Vince Russo and I mean, since week one, they did a 1.4, which was great. And this week, I mean, I get it. The World Series was on Game 7, but they were down to 720,000 viewers. NXT, I mean, they're still beating NXT by a couple hundred thousand. But nonetheless, the numbers keep dropping and keep dropping. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done with AEW. I like their product. I like where they're going. But they need a little bit more direction. I think their roster's a bit thin, quite frankly. And for casual fans that may not know all the guys in the elite or in the indie scene, you know, TNT is a very big, powerful broadcasting network. But they're not gonna take low ratings for too long. I don't care who you are. So I just hope they figure it out. And I think, you know, I think CM Punk and AEW would be a match made in heaven.
Now, you kind of brought up working with Vince Russo. How did that collaboration come about? And do you guys plan on making more shows or just sticking with the AEW show for now?
For now, we're just doing the AEW thing. We're getting a lot. I mean, man, I feel bad because I knew Vince Russo since 1994 when he was simply writing for the WWF magazine as Vic Venom. For the kayfabe, you know, WWF magazine. So I've known him that long. And he's such a genuine, super nice guy. And I think he gets a lot of heat for a lot of things. And some just, some unjust. And he's kind of like the scapegoat. He's been blackballed pretty much everywhere. You know, and it's a shame because he's, you know, he's a hell of a guy. And I think he has a hell of a mind. And he had the courage to try a bunch of stuff, and a lot of stuff didn't necessarily stick, but Vince Russo has been nothing but a pleasure, and he's a great guy to do business with, and he's a great guy to work with, and I look forward to our conversations every week. He's spot on. We share a lot of the same views. I just think that, unfortunately, fans that don't even know anything about Vince Russo are going to talk shit about Vince Russo because it's like the in vogue thing to do. But if people really sat down and listened to what he has to say, you know, I don't know. I did not because I work with him. I gain nothing by this. Vince Russo is a great dude. Never did anything wrong to me. And I think he's a hell of a mind. He's retired. He podcasts. That's what he does. And, but yeah, it's been great. And I hope we could do more. I'd love to do another show with him. I want to do a show with him just like Joe Rogan style, just like bring on guests, smoke weed and just talk shit.
That sounds amazing, right?
I would love to, you know, because after a while I get sick of talking about pro wrestling, but there's so much more you could talk about. But anyways, no, I love it. I love working for Vince. I'm very blessed. It's been one of the biggest blessings I've had this year because we get along so well. We have such just a natural connection, and I hope to do it for a long time.
PJ, you know, man, you've been a fantastic guest. You've showed me that you're nothing but humble. You know, you put other people over. If there's anything you have going on, any other projects or anything else that we can find out about or where the fans can get a hold of you at, man, now's the time to, you know, tell us about that.
Absolutely. I'm always on Twitter. You could follow me at PJ Polacco. Same on Instagram at PJ Polacco. I have a show for USA Pro Wrestling November 9th at the Armory in Orlando, Florida, which is coming up a little more than a week away. And also, I have four brand new t-shirts, four brand new designs on prowrestlingtees.com/justincredible. Some really, really cool stuff. And I'm not just saying it because it's my own. I have a lot of punk rock designs. I actually have a Green Day cover, replicated a Green Day cover with me on it. Just some really neat stuff. So if you're into wrestling merchandise, wrestling t-shirts, go over to prowrestlingtees.com/justincredible. And also, you know what? Patreon.com/RussoTWC, Truth with Consequences, but you just use the TWC. For as little as $3 a month, you could hear our show. I mean, you're really getting so much content. I mean, that's what he does for a living. I mean, he has so many shows, so many great people working for him. If you haven't checked any of it out yet, for the first 10 minutes of the show, you could actually go on Twitch and he lets you listen to the, you know, it's an audio video thing. So you can watch us and listen to us. First 10 minutes are free just to kind of give you a sample of what we're into, what we're doing. So just give it a try, man. You can't go wrong. $3, you don't like it, you cancel it. So, That's about it, man. You know, other than that, things are good, and I'm just blessed. I'm glad to have finally caught up with you and do your show, man. It's been great.
Hey, you know what? I'm more than happy to have you on, and now the listeners have no excuse not to find out where you're at.
Absolutely, absolutely.
PJ, thank you again, and of course, y'all, I'm your host, James E. Turner Jr., and you can find me on Twitter at JPsAllDay1990 and James E. Turner Jr. on IG. Everybody, thank you, PJ. Thank you again.
Thank you, James. It's been a pleasure, brother.
Absolutely. Everybody, tune in next week.
Let the positive vibes all day. Grinding, trying to make a better way. Better listen to what the songs say. Truth be told, you better slow your roll. I've been on the same road before. You know I'm the chosen one. I spit flows from the brain. Young G1.